Welcome to the Kayak Mainline Podcast. David's no officer, and I'm certainly no gentleman. And folks, you've got nowhere else to go.
Ladies and gentlemen, Dominic and Heron, thank you very much. Once again, you are listening to Kayak Mainline. I am one of your hosts, Kelly Blades, and as always is
David Johnston.
And today, David, by the way, how are you?
I'm doing fantastic. How are you?
It's been a while.
I know.
I got nasty texts and I got nasty emails because we haven't been recording.
Nasty
and I think fans. It's just terrible. Just, you know, kayakers can be really, really angry sometimes. and there you go. But, you know, we have an interesting and wonderful show today, as you are well. And I'm going to get right into the meat of this. But first, the reason why we have such an interesting and awesome show today, we have a third joining us on this very special episode of Kayak Mainline. I don't even know what episode it is. We have
12,
a third.
12.
I said I didn't. I didn't imply that you guys didn't know. I'm certain you guys know. And as you've heard, the dulcet tones of Mr. Darren Bush. He is an outdoor insider and owner of Rutabaga and kind of the philanthropist behind Canucopia. Darren Bush, my friend, the uncle to my children, how are you, good sir?
I couldn't be better. I'm really – it's great. Life's good. Got the fire in the fireplace. Was a fire softly burning and supper on the stove?
Supper on the stove. There's right. A truck out on the four lane a mile or so away. We've been off for about 6 months. Like I said, Darren's joining us today. Whole show. This is not half measures, kids. This is the real deal. We have got Darren for the entire show. So don't just, tune out a little bit later on and go forward to wait for the good Darren parts. He's here all the time. Stick around and listen to the entire show. Okay, but we do have some business to take care of, and we're going to ask Darren this as well. But first, I would be remiss if I did not ask David, what the hell have you been up to lately?
Oh, well, it's been freezing cold, so I haven't been paddling. So that's the sad part, because for the first time, Lake Ontario is frozen in my neighborhood for the first time in 10 years. So, but who cares about cold?
No.
A couple weeks ago, I went down to San Francisco. I went to the Golden Gate Sea Kayak Symposium.
Oh, what a wonderful place.
Man, it was wicked awesome. So I was pleasantly surprised to get the invite to come down and teach. And I showed up and I pretty much peed my pants every single day with excitement.
Not
a dry suit. No.
Yeah, that's wetsuit weather for you, sir, if you're going to pee your pants. It's beautiful there. You know, Marin Headlands right there. We've talked about it on the show before because I've been prior. Marin Headlands, it's a beautiful spot. You're right underneath the Golden Gate Bridge.
Oh, it's so gorgeous. I couldn't believe it.
Who'd you get to rub elbows with there?
Gordon Brown hung out with him for a good chunk of the time. And
he's good people.
He really is. Nice and sarcastic. I enjoyed it. Oh, yeah. Immensely.
He's British. Of course he's sarcastic.
And he taught me how to sing the song Caledonia, as they say. Yep.
Yeah. So I was excited, though. I'll tell you. I was teaching a class. I believe it was an introduction to rock hopping. And we went out and under the bridge. And I was so excited.
Yeah.
I'm floating under this bridge. And I'm looking at all the people thinking they were going to be just as excited. And they were all locals. And they didn't care. So I whipped out my lecture face and I gave a stern lecture about the fact that
a talking to, as it were.
Exactly. It's a pretty cool spot.
It is. Yeah. Folks, if you get a chance to go out to the Golden Gate Symposium, don't even remotely hesitate. Just go. Just book the ticket now for next year. It is that cool.
Yeah. So I prepped. I prepped for it. And I'll last little piece. So I knew it was happening. So I worked on my little lesson plans and I needed to get into the culture mindset. So I watched Sean Connery and The Rock with Nicky Cage.
Mm-hmm. Nicky. Little Nicky.
Yeah. And so I forced my kids to watch it, and they thought it was a stupid movie, but I couldn't believe it.
Kids are stupid.
They are
stupid. Okay, that was out of line. I apologize.
And I said, Daddy's going to be there, so we're watching this movie.
Right.
So then I watched some famous movie car chase scenes, because they're all based in San Francisco.
Such as Bullet.
And in fact, I did watch Bullet.
Oh, Bullet. That's the sine qua non, I think.
Yeah.
That is one of the most epic car chases of all time.
Man, I love it. So I was pretty excited about that. And again, my kids were like, why are we watching this? I was like, Daddy's going to be involved in chasing. He's going to San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
So I was disappointed because I didn't actually see any chase scenes, just some hippies. And that's about it.
Well, there is that. Did you go to Haight-Ashbury while you were there?
No. Didn't have time. I know.
Yeah, the Alternatines there make Madison and Ann Arbor look just like playtime. Really, they look like Republicans at Haight-Ashbury. And, you know, Darren is from Madison, so he knows the hippie culture there.
Mm-hmm. People's Republic of Madison? Absolutely.
Exactly. Yep. Yep.
And how about you guys? What have you been up to?
Well, check out this. Okay. Check this segue out. So you were hobnobbing and rubbing elbows with a lot of famous people. Darren Bush, you actually have a little tiny paddling event coming up where you're going to be hobnobbing and rubbing elbows with some of the creme de la creme of the paddle sports world.
Well, I neither hob nor knob.
no hobbing nor knobbing.
No, neither. Neither nor. Well, we have Cornucopia coming up in about 2.5-3 weeks, something like that. Mm-hmm. And I'm excited. It's always nice to have a family reunion. And
you must be freaking out knowing that it's so close.
I'm not, because I have, well, first of all, if I haven't done my part by now, it ain't going to happen. Mm. And as we say, the pig is moving through the python. at this point, the people that are nervous are the people who are receiving and tagging product. But I got the best staff in the world. So at this point, my work is done. I'm working on summer stuff now. But it's all coming together nicely. And if you follow us on Facebook, you can get pretty much daily updates of who's coming and who's speaking and what's going on. And we're going to pull the trigger on it in about 3 weeks.
And you got some pretty big shots. You got some big shots going to be there.
Yeah, we do. We had a really interesting year with the speakers. We turned over about half the speakers. There's some people that if they didn't come, we'd be lynched, you know, because right. they're regulars, you know, the Cliff Jacobsons and such.
Sure.
But about half of the people came to us. We don't go looking for speakers, interestingly. They come and find us. And we had some wonderful, wonderful people come and propose. And we had maybe twice as many applications as we had spots. So really? We were able to really be selective and put some people off till next year just because we want to have them. We just don't have space. Mm-hmm. But it's going to be a good one.
The place is phenomenal. Kids, again, if you're going to go to the Golden Gate Symposium, you might as well come down Midwest and go to Cornucopia. It is something that you can't quite imagine until you see it. And for those of you who've been there, you just know it's sort of a family affair. You see a bunch of people that you have not seen for a year, possibly. You know, this is your time in the spring to reconnect with a lot of people. So definitely come to Cornucopia. And yeah, you do have a pretty cool group of people there working for you and working with you. And the speakers are great. The vendors are great, and can't say enough good stuff about it. And I will be there. David, you're not going to be there this year.
No, I'm on a road trip. We're going down south.
Where south? Tell me.
We're going to Myrtle Beach, South Carolina.
Okay.
Because it's our spring break, so that's that over that same weekend. So
it's like their Thanksgiving. It's always earlier than our Thanksgiving.
I know.
Yeah, yeah. They're all messed up over.
But there. I went last year. Had a fantastic time. I'll be at it next year.
Yep. Hopefully we can do that. You know, it'd be really cool. Put this in your pipe and smoke it. Your bonnet. We should do, if we can get ourselves together and record more than once every 6 months, we should do a live show at Cornucopia.
I think in my head, I'm funnier live than I am in real life.
That would be, yeah.
That's it. That's all we got. Yep. You're good.
That would be fun. We could do that Sunday afternoon when everybody's either done being angry with me or, yes. Or just things are settled down a little bit.
Yeah, we could have a Q&A session. And, you know, write us on Facebook or shoot us an email, kayakmainline@gmail.com, and let us know what you guys think of this. And we'll see if we can apply the screws to Darren and see if we can make this happen. So,
well, we can get more people. We can walk around and get some of the other folks that are there, get some Steve Shearer action. And, you know, he's a good guy, and yep. There's probably half a dozen people that would not be embarrassed to talk to us on mic.
As a rule, yeah. And Cindy's prettier. I'm just going to throw that out there.
Yeah, Cindy, you know, sure. What, though? Steve looks just as good on radio as she does.
It's true. Although you can sense that he has a magnanimous beard on radio, even, you know. I mean, that thing is just...
Gate, I just stared at it the whole time.
He looks like Neptune a bit.
He needs to braid it and look like Gimli.
Yep. That is a good thing. Well, hey, kids. So let's get to the meat of the program here. We got a bunch to talk about. We like I said before, we have had a hiatus for about 6 months now. We had, I trust everybody had a wonderful Christmas.
Yes, it was adequate.
Good. Totally adequate. Perfect.
Nice.
Good. And the kids are all happy. Everybody's happy at the homes. We can just move on past that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, good. All kids home for Christmas, which was really nice. Had my daughter back, and so it was good.
Yeah, well, we've got little ones. You've got bigger ones, so it's good that they can come back. And you know, I just adore that Whitney and Ian. But Whitney, she's like my girl there. So, but we've got family stuff aside. We have got some stuff to talk about. Should we maybe, I don't know, talk about some news?
It's time for the Kayak Mainline News. Yes, your source for news all over the world, down the street or just outside your door.
So I did some digging over the last couple of weeks. I've been holding on to some stories that I found. And I have three articles that I wanted to
share. Three articles.
And for some reason, I don't know what it is, but there are a whole pile of paddlers who keep getting in trouble with the law. So I have a bit of a theme for that, but I'm going to start with some science first.
Oh, I love science. I'm a big fan of the science. Tell me about science.
So the headline is, why do mosquitoes prefer to eat some people over others?
And I've been waiting to answer this.
Hold on. Let me get my wife. She wants to hear this.
Okay.
She's a bug magnet.
So a bug magnet. That is not actually, hopefully she won't listen to this because that is not complimentary.
It's a bit controversial because there's a Dr. Zwiebel, and I'm going to go with that pronunciation because I'm pretty sure it's accurate. Yeah.
Okay.
And he works in biological sciences at Vanderbilt University.
Okay.
And so their prevailing wisdom is that mosquitoes are attracted by carbon dioxide that you breathe out. And he feels that it's less about carbon dioxide and more about human body odor. And in particular, the type of bacteria that sits on your skin.
So are they suggesting possibly that it is like a smellier person?
Well, so he says here that the flora and fauna of our skin, related to the types of bugs that like to crawl around on it, is appetizing to mosquitoes and can increase when we sweat or spend a lot of time outdoors. And he feels that it's a combination of the two, and the fact that you smell more or more appealing is why the bugs come to you, as opposed to you just being breathing out a lot more carbon dioxide.
So okay.
It's just initial research. Like all the other articles that I found, these are less based on fact than a speculation.
So it could be just hokum. We don't know.
Well, he did say that they have done some research, and they feel that if you have high cholesterol or diabetes, that also doesn't attract mosquitoes. So,
does not
really?
No, yeah. I guess it's some old wives' tale that if you have diabetes, then the mosquitoes don't bother you. But they've done some research and have debunked that, which I didn't even know it was a myth to be debunked to start with.
Never heard of it before.
Yeah. Anyways, so that's my first one. So I'm going to keep on that.
So no more chugging corn syrup before I go to the Boundary Waters. Is that what you're saying?
You can still do it. All you want, because it's been debunked. You can just drink. That's actually something that Darren likes to do, is he likes to take buckets of corn syrup and, pounds of sugar and just eat it.
Right.
Just completely.
Well, so what the real takeaway message of this is that we should all be bringing Axe body spray with us in the forest to cover up our man's.
Well, I was going to ask to see if they did anything where the mosquitoes were attracted to sexy.
Well, it's interesting. That was that study was actually funded by Procter & Gamble.
There you go.
Follow the money, man. Follow the money.
like every good theory. Yes. Because I know I get chewed up by mosquitoes. And I think probably everybody in the world might say that they get chewed up by mosquitoes. But I think I'm extra sexy. I think that's it. So
mosquitoes, that's what it is?
Right.
Yeah.
No, just to everybody. I am just a sexy, sexy man.
Yeah. Hence the reason why this is an audio podcast as a podcast.
Yes.
You got a face for radio, dude.
I do. I do have I have that.
Yeah.
Well, I have another theory about this because, see, my wife will sit down and she'll get chewed up and I'll sit right next to her and nary a one. Mm. So what I actually think is maybe I'm getting bitten almost as much as she is. It's just that I don't feel it and I don't have the histamine reaction to it, so I don't get the bumps.
Mm.
So it might be just that I'm getting eaten and don't know it.
Well, something that was kind of getting to is that I think everybody, if you ask categorically, everybody gets bitten by mosquitoes. So I don't know that there's necessarily some people who get bitten more and some people who get bitten less. It just doesn't bother me when I get them, just like, you were saying. Right. So
Was it the last episode we were talking about mosquitoes have started to become genetically immune to
DEET?
Yeah.
And I think they're growing tentacles too.
And when that happens, that's going to be the perfect storm to give enough reason that we just need to stay indoors.
All right. So mosquitoes, the takeaway is that they go after sexy. Yeah. I'm just going to make stuff up. They go after sexy. They're growing tentacles. They're not afraid of DEET. And somebody from Vanderbilt did a study, probably got paid too much for it, and it was funded by Procter & Gamble.
Exactly. Except
good
part.
You're going to follow up the story now, aren't you, David? Like the guy got shot in the butt.
Okay. For the record, I followed up on that 2 weeks ago.
You did not.
I did. I decided to do some research and see if I could figure out in the courts what so the background piece is the guy in the canoe, the course it happened in Florida, tips over and by a motorboat wave, and so he pulls out his gun and he shoots the guy driving the boat in the butt.
Right.
So when was that? Like 2 years ago?
It was a while.
Oh, I've been on the case.
Thank you, Sherlock.
Yeah, so they charged the guy, and I don't know. I tried to find the court case, and I don't think it ever actually went to court, but the guy who was charged has been arrested another time because I looked him up in the local county.
Yep.
So anyways, so I've been on the case on the serial butt shooter, and there's really nothing's happened, and I don't know what's going on. So
you followed up, and you have nothing to report.
The fact I followed up is I want the credit for that.
I take away the notion that you're Sherlock Holmes. Now you're just Dr. Watson. You're just the drunk dude who comes and sits down and waits for somebody else to explain things you can't possibly comprehend.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's move on with the guy that got caught smuggling meth inside a kayak.
Okay.
Heard about that one.
Yeah. Okay.
I like it already coming from Detroit. I like this angle.
Yeah. So that was in Australia, and that was just this past week. So it was $163 million a U.S. That was the value of how much meth it was. It was
in one kayak?
So no, it was in a shipping container full of kayaks, 27 of them mashed in there, and it was in amongst all the stuff. And some of it was stuffed in the hatches and in all amongst the boats. So they did an x-ray at the border in going into Australian customs. And what do you know? There's an extra 60 pounds of meth in there.
They're just flotation bags. What are you saying?
Okay, so what company? Can you divulge what company?
I saw there was a little piece, Associated Press had a little – the police did a press gig, and they hauled out the kayak, like one of the kayaks of the 27, and they have these mountain full of drugs on a table, and they're falling off the table, you know, like they like to do. And they had no markings on it, like as far as, you know, the company. And so I did a little research, and it ended up being a company out of China that just makes knockoff boats that if you want a kayak or if you want – plastic toys. That's essentially what they specialize in.
Or apparently heroin.
Well, those are the ones that end up in Costco in a box.
And that's exactly what it was. And so they'll do, you know, if you want to black label it and get your own label stuck on it or anything like that. But so it was a molding company out of China. And so I don't think they were actually involved in it, but somebody ordered it and somehow in line the boat.
That's an interesting call to make. I just have to think that, you know, when you call up, make a 27 kayaks, and could you stuff it with meth?
I'd like to weigh slightly more than they normally do, wink, wink.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. I think there was a wink involved. There had to have been a wink involved somewhere.
So what they did was they knew it was in there, and so what did they let it go through customs, and they tracked
those insidious bastards.
Yeah, and four people showed up to
receive. It was a sting operation, wasn't it?
Yeah, they showed up to receive it, and they arrested them at the port when they tried.
Interestingly enough, you know what I heard about this is those four people actually were promised that they won a color TV, and all they had to do was come down and collect it.
And they were all wearing Leonard Skinner T-shirts and
headlines. They were.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And parole officers, which is crazy. So the four people show up. So they're like wringing their hands. So in my mind, they're like those super style villains that wring their hands when their plan is coming together. And they're coming in. They're like, yes. Yeah. Well, maybe not the hands. You never know. Yeah. So they're coming in and they're like, oh, we got through. We got our meth. We've got $166 million worth of meth, and they show up. So what happens, Dave?
Arrested them, and the police are all
excited. No, there's got to be, like, you know, fill it in, bud. Fill it in. Make it like.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So there was a shootout. I showed up.
They would have gotten away for it if it weren't for those meddling kids.
Exactly. Yes. Like, where are my boats? And they start putting them on the thing, and the guys come running out, all bulletproof vests, you know, with the big letters, police.
Right.
And they came running down, and full shootout. Sadly, no one was killed. And
each boat was punctured 53 times, still which, is a good, which isn't a bad thing necessarily.
Yeah. And for the people who were interested, they were double sit on top kayaks.
Oh, wow. No harm, no foul on that one. That's right. So these four guys show up and they got meth laden boats, and this is their big plan. So you got to think that, first of all, these crimes, in all honesty, these crimes never happened. Like, this was not their first time doing it.
No one steps up to 163 million level.
Right. The first time you do it, you know, you slip a little in there to see if you can get it by. And then this just grows exponentially. And then all of a sudden, so these guys, let's say, that, you know, wildly speculating, making no sense whatsoever. They've done this half a dozen times. They probably have made millions of dollars off of these kayaks.
Probably.
Mm-hmm. I mean, four guys.
This is quite a profit margin there.
Look, they're a molding company.
Yeah.
Last time it was kiddie pools.
Exactly. Yeah. They dug some kiddie pools
mix it up a little.
You know? Yeah. So we got, okay. So the four guys come in, they get arrested. What happens to them?
Well, they got beat up in the drunk tank.
No.
There.
I love that you made that up and I bought it for a second. Like, you couldn't figure out what happened for a guy getting shot. Yeah, you couldn't figure out that what happened to a guy who gets shot in the butt in the U.S., but you knew for a moment in my mind that four meth dealers got beat up in the drunk tank.
Yep. Yeah, that's exactly what happened. That's awesome. Anyways, the police are pretty excited because it's their biggest bust ever in the world of meth.
Well, it's Australia.
Well, yeah, you know. But I do have another Australian kayaker had to get involved with the police.
You know what? I have to stop us and say this is probably the most actual kayak news we've had during the kayak news portion of the show. Darren, you're a good influence.
Yeah. I have to do my best here.
Yeah. If you what happened here? So a 43-year-old man from southeast Queensland, he was charged for drinking and boating. Had a blood alcohol limit of four times the legal limit. And what was he doing? He was kayaking.
Doesn't four times kill you?
Well, I can only believe the truth. It was in print.
So what you don't understand, maybe you do, David. You know, you're from Ontario, so you're sort of like the Midwest version of Canada. But for Darren and I to hear this story, it is a non-story. From me being from Michigan, him being from Wisconsin, in a kayak or a canoe with four times the blood alcohol level, that's just an hour north of us. That is... Am I wrong, Darren, on that one?
Well, usually they're not in a canoe or a kayak. Usually they're like laying in the middle of the road.
Well, anyways, the police saw him. He was apparently, according to the description, he was zigzagging across the lake.
No, the deuce could say.
He could have just been a beginner paddler.
Right, that's true.
He was one of those boats from Australia.
Well, it's the same style of boat. So they followed him to shore, and he tries to make a break for it and gets out and stumbling all over the road.
Makes a break for it. Yeah. He was drunk.
They caught him while he was hooking his cart up to his kayak.
Yeah. That's crazy. So he's in a tandem kayak, tandem sit on top kayak, and he's paddling drunk four times the legal limit. And only that person would say, all right, I'm out. I'm going. I can make it. He is drunk as a piper.
Yep. So he was shocked to get a $750 fine and has to go to court because it's his third time getting caught.
Yeah, that's okay. So he's had three run-ins with the law.
Yeah.
Being drunk and kayaking. David, are you going to follow up on the story?
Oh,
because I care about this man. Yeah. And we should do an intervention, a kayak intervention.
Yeah, I've already sent him an email. I want to try to do a one-on-one interview.
Pull up a white double kayak and throw him in the back cockpit. Is that what you're saying?
Yep, that's how it's going to be. Yeah. Sit him down. That's lovely. All right, so we got Australians who are drunk. We've got Australians who smuggle crystal meth. And then what was the first story we did?
Mosquitoes.
Yeah. It's already gone.
Yeah. Yeah, it was, you know, fluttering in and out. So that's our news for this week.
All right, so no more news, but that is some good news. David, thank you for digging up the dirt, as always.
No problem.
It is a wonderful thing you have done. And we've got some other things to talk about. Now, Darren did not just come on this podcast as a pretty face. He brought some hard hitting stuff to talk about. So Darren, I'm going to give you the floor for a minute and let you get at it.
Okay. So, the reason this came up is little known fact is that I serve on the board of directors for the Outdoor Industry Association, which is kind of like being kissed by your sister. But at any rate, they put out they spent a lot of time and a lot of money doing participation studies because, frankly, the job of the OIA is to make sure that we have a continued ability to recreate, you know, to do things, to have places to go and to have access to gear. And so they're concerned, obviously, about what's going on in the outdoor industry and what's going on with participation. So they hire a very reputable and large organization to survey over 40,000 people about their outdoor activities and what they do. And there's been some chatter on the internet recently, shockingly, about participation for kayaking. With some believing that it's in its great demise and that it's going to tank and we're all going to be sitting around looking at each other. And others saying, no, it's growing, it's doing well. You say, well, you know, when you have chatter, the best thing to do is, you know, go look at the data. And the data are really pretty compelling. We are not, as they say, dying. We are actually doing really well.
Really? Kayaking. Now, are we talking kayaking across the board? Are we talking subsets of kayaking? What's the give us a little bit more on that.
Okay. Well, actually, if you go to outdoorindustry.org, you can download the participation study yourself. However, cool. I won't make you do that right now because you'd have to stop the podcast and go do that. Instead,
plus I'm not right.
I'm going to pull up the data here and just give you a quick overview of it. Statistics. Oh, joy. Here it is. Let me give you some quick stuff that I think you'll find interesting just overall. So overall, why do people participate in outdoor activities? So they just ask
woo women.
No, everybody. Why do you like going outside? And 70% said exercise. The ones that I like are 54% to be with family and friends.
Ugh. Oh, sounds terrible. That sounds lovely.
Oh,
in your case, just friends.
Right.
To be close to nature, 47%.
Mm-hmm.
This was to enjoy the sounds and smells of nature, 44%.
Oh, they're telling you what you want to hear.
Well, yeah. Well,
smells of nature.
And I can talk about that if you want to.
I love the smell of rotting leaves.
Observe scenic beauty, 46%. Get away from the usual demands, 46%. Gain a sense of accomplishment, 29%. Be with people who enjoy the same activities, 32%. So there's a lot of reasons people go outside.
Hey, Darren.
Yeah.
What's the percentage of people who enjoy the outdoors life because they want to smuggle crystal meth? Is that a low percentage?
You know what? It didn't make the cutoff.
I think it's anecdotally 77%.
77, according to the studies we made up, at 77%. Proceed, Darren. I apologize.
No, that's fine. Wait, hold on. Here it is. Smuggle crystal meth. 0.003%. However, smuggle reefer, 1.2%. So,
wow.
So participation over the past several years from 2006. Now, this is people who did it, not people who are it. Okay, so when you say I'm a sea kayaker, they don't really define what that is because that's kind of a nebulous thing. But this is just strictly participation. So in 2006, 124,000 people participated in sea kayaking, which they call sea touring. Okay,
cool.
Jump forward a couple years to 2010, 358,000 people. Little dip in 2011, 228,000. But then 2012, we're roaring back at 333,000 people.
Wow.
Okay. That's a lot of people in this country that participated in sea kayaking. Now,
that's a good point. This is just U.S. statistics.
This is, yeah, because, you know, who else cares, right? I mean,
right.
It's just
because fully 98% of all Canadians kayak.
Well, as I say, I would double it for Canadians just because I think they're a little more in touch with the outdoors.
Yep.
Except for in Toronto. But that's right. Okay.
Because Toronto. Well, Saskatoon has 13 months worth of winter every year.
Yep.
Well, I mean, but hold on. Let's go back to those numbers because, so 2006, they're saying 124,000 people did it. And what?
Right.
Is that. I could say I do it once a year. Is that kind of roughly what they're saying? Like once or twice a year?
Did you do it this year? So okay. Did you go out? And so let's say that the average person, let's say half of them went out and did it one day when they went out to visit a buddy in Maine or California or whatever, and they went sea kayaking. Still, you know, that's still a lot of people that did it more than once.
But that's a growth of, so it started in 2006, 124,000 people. In 2012, it's 333. That's 209,000 people in increase. That's a, you know, that's a huge amount.
So rec kayaking, recreational kayaking, which is anything but sea kayaking probably, in 2006, it was 1.189 million or 2.4% of the population. So almost, well, more than 10 times more than sea kayakers.
Really?
Right.
Makes sense.
So that's the person that goes to Hawaii and jumps in to sit on top and goes and plays around. And that's, you know, people, oh, that's just people going to Hawaii and playing around and sit on top. That's great. That's what we want, right? Right.
Yeah.
Okay. 2008, 1.227 million. 2012, big drop, right? 1.743 million. Or 3.4% of the population. So rec kayaking is also going up. It's going up a little faster and a little bit more than kayaking. And it's kind of cool. So lest we get a big head about this.
Too late.
Well, in 2006, 4.5 million people participated in paintball.
Wow.
But it peaked in 2007 at 5.4. We're down to 3.5 million people participating in paintball.
That's a lot of bachelor parties.
It's, well, exactly. I mean, and again, this is kind of like kayaking. There's paintball people and people who go paintballing, and they're two different things.
So paintball is dropping, though.
Paintball is dropping, yeah. Yeah, it peaked, and it's kind of tapering off.
But, I mean, you think about it. How many times are you going to get shot with a paintball at 300 miles an hour before you just give it up? Because it hurts. I don't know if you know this.
It depends how many shots you've had before you do it. And
I think lost a million participants since 2006.
Right. Well, David's right.
Screw you, paintball.
Yeah, right. Well, Think about it. I mean, most of these are probably one time a year's bachelor party kind of stuff. Right. And the other thing is this is a self-reported survey.
Right.
Okay.
Fair enough. So the answer is the shorter the answer is for all of us listening and playing the home game is that kayaking is on an upswing.
Yes. And here's the other fun part.
Okay. Bring it.
Median age of first time participants. Okay. This is really cool. So this tells you, you know, basically how old are people. What the median age and first time percents tell you is what's the age of people getting started in this. And what percentage of them are new? Okay, so this is cool. So stand-up paddling, which, you know, they're our cousins. 56% of people this year are first-time users.
Really?
Yep.
Not surprising.
Hey, it's growing. Nope. And the median age was 28 years old. Okay?
Sure.
So, that doesn't surprise me.
Yeah.
Look, face it. A surfboard on top of your car looks bitchin'.
Well, yeah, and Kid Rock does it. You know, if Kid Rock stand-up paddles, then it's got to be hip.
So, but triathlon, 39% of people who did triathlons are new this year. Median age was 31. Adventure racing, 36% new, median age of 29, of course. Those are people that just got out of the Marines.
Right.
So, whitewater kayaking, 32% are new this year, median age is 29. Now, that's interesting. I think it's a little high. I think there's a reporting bias there. You know, it's basically a question saying, how badass are you? And
sure.
Because if you look at the media and what they portray kayaking as, it's, you know, basically guys with 4-inch gauges in their earlobes drinking Red Bull and going over waterfalls.
Dave Vasili. That's all I have to say.
Right.
Dave.
It's Dem Piranha. Shits. And who doesn't want to be Dem Shits, right?
Right, exactly.
Right. Okay. So here's
32% does seem really high that a third of everybody on the river is the first time they've ever done it. In my head, it's
not quite. A little more subtle. It's a third of people that did it for the first time are new. So we don't know what percentage of participants are first timers. We don't know what that means exactly. It could mean a lot of different.
So let me understand. So the 32% of people who tried kayaking for the first time did it in a whitewater boat.
No.
Okay.
No, back up.
Yeah. Okay.
So the median age of people who are whitewater kayaking right now is 29 years old.
Right.
Okay. 32% of people who are whitewater paddling right now said they did it for the first time this year. So that's
this year. Okay.
Correct.
That makes sense.
And again, I think that's a little high. And these numbers were criticized a little bit. The whitewater numbers were criticized a little bit. And I think that, again, that's reporting bias. And I also think it's a media bias.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
Right. Okay. So 28% rafting, median age is 30. I think that's the bachelor party effect. I think that's actually right. Mm-hmm. So let's just skip a bunch of these. Now, here's fly fishing. 21% are new, which is really low. And the average age is 32. Median age is 32, which is pretty high. It's pretty high.
You do expect it to be like 21?
I expect it to be like 50.
Yeah. Okay, because that's what I was picturing in my head. It's like some old retired man.
Yeah, I've been to the...
With a golden retriever or something.
Yeah.
In the car, yeah. No, I've been to the fly fishing trade shows, and there's a lot of guys with gray beards and not a lot of women, which is, again, a problem for them. But the interesting one is kayaking, sea kayaking. So 30% of people who sea kayak said they had their first experience this year. Okay, people surveyed. And the median age was 32, which is quite young. That's actually quite young. Because, again, the picture you think of sea kayakers is a bunch of Steve Scherers, right?
Right, with the beard and the
bunch of leathery guys and the beards. Right,
right.
So it is actually lower than I expected.
That is tons lower than I expected.
But in that, so you have kayaking, so does that include, wreck kayaking is a different category.
Wreck kayaking actually is smaller in terms of new people. It's 25%. But the median age is the same. So again, the demise of sea kayaking is not true.
Just categorically not true. There you go. We're doing the right stuff here.
Well, this is the thing I think is interesting. This speaks to the whole marketing of the sport because we do a really crappy job of it as an industry, really crappy. So bow hunting, 18% of people started this year of people that did it this year are new, and 27%, 27 is the median age.
Right.
Hunting is hurting right now. It's hurting badly. And the cool part, for them is that they know it. And they're concerned about it, and they're responding. So if you look around, you'll see lots of youth training courses and, ways to mentor new hunters. And irrespective of how you feel about hunting, we need to be proactive like they are.
Mm. Sure, because it's an interesting business model to follow.
Well, and this has happened before. This happened with diving.
Yeah, okay.
They really pushed it. And the barrier to entry in diving is huge. You think it's difficult for kayaking? Try it with diving. It's really easy to kill yourself diving, right? And it does require a lot of training and a lot of equipment. So what the diving industry did is they saw their numbers dropping. They said, well, let's see. What can we do? So they got into the destination business, and they went out to all the places that were destinations and said, let's work together to develop dive centers, places to go. We're starting to do this in paddling with water trails and things like that, but we have a long way to go.
Mm. But it's nice young age, which is nice to see.
It is. 32 is a brilliant. I mean, I thought I started as a punk kid at, 26 years old. And truly, when I started, that was a terribly young age to begin sea kayaking. But 32 is because everybody I went with was 40 and above at that time. So 32 is fantastic.
So anyway, that's a lot of numbers to throw at you. But so to sum it up in 30 seconds, Kelly, or actually David, why don't you do this one?
Participation numbers are increasing. Average age is decreasing. And people don't like to do it for various reasons.
Right.
And we're still all afraid of sharks.
Yep. Well, it's funny because...
actually, I've moved on because for me, it's Asian carp. Jumping out of the water hit me in the head.
I gotta say too that squid now for me.
You know what it is for me is giant octopus because
20,000 Leagues Under the Sea.
No, mega shark versus giant octopus.
Okay. Yeah, but then we have Sharknado, which totally ruins everything for us.
Did you know that if you take a bottle of propane and tape a flare to it, you can stop a tornado?
I did not know this.
It's true. It was shown to be true in Sharknado. And did you also know Tara Reid looks terrible?
She really did not look good.
Oh, my gosh.
No, I was not impressed with her.
How the mighty have fallen. Yeah.
Yeah, but what was the guy from 90210?
Oh, Steve.
He was handsome. And, I mean, he has embraced his adulthood.
Oh, I know.
Just state for the record.
Yeah.
Well, the next thing is Branson. They are going to go to Branson, Missouri and do Cat on a Hot Tin Roof. I guarantee it.
Fair enough. Hey, I'm going to take a left turn on Queer Street here, and I'm going to go. I'm looking right at our Facebook page, David and Darren.
Okay.
And nice. looking right here, and you know what? I hadn't been paying attention to the Facebook much lately, and it turns out we have a couple of questions from past episodes, as well as a very special question. I'm very excited about this one.
Okay.
So the very first question is from this is back in September, which I think is probably the last time we recorded. John Maxfield. He asked if we could talk about a good poly boat for a bigger guy, maybe 6'1", 220. And he was even polite enough to say that's about 100 kilos for you, David.
Nice.
He's not ready to move up to a composite boat, and a bathtub wreck boat isn't – his words, not mine – isn't what he's looking for. Yeah, that's – so I have some recommendations, and I'd like to hear what you guys have to say. So a wreck boat – poly or not a wreck boat, a poly boat – for John, 6'1", 220, 100 kilos.
He's just getting into it?
Just getting into it. That's what he says, kind of.
Like maybe like a tsunami or something like that?
You know, he actually talks about a tsunami a little bit, and I think that's a fine boat for him. He also asked about the Scorpio, which he didn't want to get quite aggressive, as aggressive. But I've got my own feelings on that, but I'm going to hold off on my feelings so I can rant and rave later.
Oh, good.
Yes.
Well, I mean, the easy answer is a 14 to 15 foot recreational day tour.
Sure.
The question I always ask people who say things like this is, well, where do you want to go with this? If this is the end and you just want to paddle around and be stable and comfortable and, you know, paddle along the shore and maybe pop out to an island or two, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that.
Yeah,
It's a great choice. The problem is it's kind of like a beach cruiser. You know, everybody loves a beach cruiser, but if you decide you want to ride 50 miles or 20 miles or, you know, do something that's a little more advanced, you really can't change the tires out on a kayak. You know, you can put some skinnier tires on a beach cruiser, make it roll a little easier. So it really depends on the amount of control you want over your boat. If you're going to do edging or any sort of boat control stuff, you're going to be fighting your boat.
And so is that fine line between stability and performance?
Correct. But what I've learned over the years is you can make yourself, you can increase your skills easier than you can make a boat change its physical characteristics. Like you can't change a boat's characteristics. You just, right.
Well, so, the first thing I would, you got more? Go ahead, Darren.
No, I want to hear what you have to say now.
Well, the first thing I'd like to tell John is if you're not 32, don't even bother.
Stay at home.
Statistically, you're not ready for kayaking.
If you're 64 and have a newborn, go for it.
If you're 64 and have a newborn, totally different time. No, you know, my feeling on this is Darren hit the nail on the head. Where do you see yourself? Don't worry about the now necessarily. Buy a boat that will that will take you where you want to go. I'm here to tell you, any boat that you get, spend a little time in it, get a little saddle time, and you're going to be fine. You're going to be just fine. You're going to learn that boat, and your skills are going to catch up if you get a little bit more aggressive boat. And you're going to be happier in the long run, just biting the bullet and getting maybe a longer, faster boat if you want to do touring. Getting a proper whitewater boat if you want to go whitewater paddling, wherever you see yourself going, where if you want to go paddle out to an island twice a year, get a boat that'll do that. So far as the size goes,
I'm gonna not disagree with you, but add a little bit of a caveat there.
Bring it.
So some people buy a boat for an aspirational trip. I am someday gonna go to the Boundary Waters and do this thing. What are you going to do 95% of the time? I'm going to paddle on my local lake. Well, buying a boat for aspiration that you're going to use someday for a trip that you might take is kind of like buying a moving van and driving it around town in case you move someday.
Yeah, but it's more like buying a sports car, even though you're never going to go out and try to relive your youth, though. You can still have a Mustang and still go grocery shopping in that Mustang. You don't always have to go out and be a 50-year-old guy trying to pick up 22-year-old chicks.
I'm 51. What's your point?
Do you own a Mustang?
No, it got me there. You've run the ring around me logically.
Ha-ha!
Well, that's the thing. People end up buying a boat for the 1% time that they actually have the dream of using it. 95%, they're in a boat that ends up being a compromise dream.
But if you're buying that boat for that dream, and that's where you want to go, you get the boat, you go out and you train for that, and you can realize that dream. It would suck if you went out and bought, you know, too small and too wide a boat, only to go out and do, you know, the North Shore of Lake Superior, and you find out that once you're ready to enact that dream, the boat that you've got is not going to be efficient enough, is not going to be big enough for the cargo capacity and things like that. So, I mean, yeah, Darren's absolutely right, and I'm here to agree 100% with the stuff that Darren said in the beginning, which is a 15-foot boat gets you a lot of places far better than you can possibly imagine. Don't believe the hype that everybody needs to be a sea kayaker or a badass whitewater kayaker or whatever. A 15-foot boat will do most things that you need to do very, very well. And so far as fit and finish of the boat, if it's a little too wide for you, pad it out. You know, back in the day, when you got a whitewater boat specifically, even, you know, when I started sea kayaking, you got a sea kayak, you spend a weekend in your garage padding it out. And, you know, for those of us who like to tip a glass now and again, we'd get a six pack and you'd sit there and you'd pad everything out. You'd drink a beer, you'd listen to the radio, what have you, you know, listen to your Duran Duran CDs, and you would pad this boat out. And at the end of the day, it didn't matter how wide or how narrow it was, you fit in that boat. I think that's more important, to fit yourself in a boat, decide on a hull design, 15 foot, 14 foot, 90 feet, don't care. But I'm going to agree with David and I'm going to agree with Darren on this in saying that, you know, don't, just because you have that dream, don't think that anything less than a sea kayak or a whitewater kayak is going to do the job.
Hey, you're back.
I'm back.
Oh, what happened there? Did we lose everybody?
My internet died.
Oh, well, you're back. Seamlessly, you're back.
So whatever you just said for the past 2 minutes, you're full of crap.
And or I'm completely right. There's no gray area.
But I get what you're saying. So here's what I think, and I agree with that as well. There's one place that I don't agree. If you're a sea kayak, you want to buy weighs, you know, 60 pounds, and what you really want to do is paddle locally, and you can get one that's 40 pounds, buy the lighter boat, because you'll use it more if it's lighter.
Yeah.
And when you go someplace like, you know, like Superior or, you know, wherever you go, rent. And the nice thing about renting is you can try two or three different kinds of boats and really kind of get dialed in which one you like in real conditions.
And the other thing, too, is that when I'd work at the shop and people would walk in and they'd say, you know, I'm just getting started, I would say, you know, here's a boat that'll work for today and it'll work for tomorrow. You can always sell it as soon as you outgrow it, you know, so it's not the boat you're kind of locked into. It'll, you know, because you got to sort out, in this guy's case, you'd potentially have to sort out some balance issues and get to, you know, get a skill set, and then you can graduate up to another boat after that. I mean, it's a growth process in a lot of times, and I think sometimes people either buy a boat that's too much boat for them, or most times people buy a boat that's so basic they've outgrown it by the time they've walked out of the shop for the first time ever. So either way, sometimes they're not happy with it, but try a lot, paddle a lot. That's usually what I end up doing for telling people.
I've said a million times, and I'll say it a million billion times again, your first boat is never your last boat. And, you know, John, I think, gets this in reading his post. I think he gets that. This is what he's trying to come up with is the next logical step. But your first boat is never your last boat, because even when you get to that very top of sea kayaking and you get your really sweet ultralight composite boat, or maybe you're a surf ski guy and you get an ultralight surf ski thing, you want to try a different discipline of kayaking. And so you're going to end up with another boat.
Cool. You got one more question?
I do. As a matter of fact, I got two, but one's really, really quick.
Okay.
I'm going to ask you this. So we got Wendell. I love the name Wendell. Wendell says way back in episode 1 or 2, you said that there were 11 points of contact where you need to pad properly and outfit your boat, and teased you would tell us in the next episode. You never did.
Sounds like we've met our expectations of disappointment.
Totally. Wendell, thanks for freaking calling me out, brother. I appreciate it. And, he said I can think of 10. And he says, tell us. So, you know, I said 11 points of contact. You guys know what they are? You guys got a different story?
One is the coccyx. I know that.
Coccyx, yep. Because you just love saying coccyx.
Absolutely. Because I'm grade 8.
all over again.
He said coccyx.
Coccyx.
Oh, yeah, I know what the coccyx is. Well, I just can't say it. I got a little sinus thing. I can't say coccyx. Yeah.
So. All right, what else have we got? So we've got heels and toes.
Head, shoulders, heels and toes, heels and toes. Yeah, so your toes, okay. Two toes, okay. Well, balls of your feet, two heels.
Okay.
All right. Got two knees.
All right.
So that's six total, right?
Okay.
Got two butt cheeks.
Okay.
Seven, eight, hips.
Okay. 9, 10.
Yep. And then your back.
No.
The coccyx. Okay, you can say coccyx, yes. It's all that sort of area, that so area.
So there's 12. No, there's 12. I'm sticking with 12.
Okay, Darren came up with a new one. The coccyx and the back. So yeah, that's what we're talking about. We all agree on that one?
Yeah, I can work on that.
Cool. And if you can come up, you know, and this is one of those thought processes. If you really think about it and micromanage this problem, you will come up with like 300, I'm sure. I'm sure there are people just sitting around with their abacus figuring out how many places they touch in their boat.
Oh, for sure. And they're drafting up a letter of all the things we did wrong.
Yeah. And they will give us a stern talking to. All right. So we got one more question here. And I love this one quite a bit for a specific reason. We've got Michael Stenberg. Could be Steinberg, but I think it's Steinberg. So, dude, if I'm butchering your name, man, I do apologize. I am so American, it hurts. So, love you. Thanks for listening. Do you have any kayak camping stories and advice? I really want to do a week trip camping, but how do you prepare yourself for being alone without going crazy? Now, here's the reason why I love it. You ready? He's from Sweden.
Mm.
We have our first official European who listens and gives us a question.
Really? We've really gone international.
We have gone international.
Well, binational, so, I guess, actually.
Binational. Yeah,
binational. Trinational. Sure. Canada, US, and Sweden.
And one Swedish dude. And
big in Sweden.
So, but yeah, I mean, this is a pretty good question. And obviously, the quick answer we can give you is, download all the Kayak Mainline episodes, and you know, that's like 11 hours worth of listening to. So you got some time. That'll keep you going crazy. 12 now. We got 12.
You could drive to the Arctic Circle and back, listening to nothing but Kayak Mainline.
See,
man, there you go. Worst trip ever.
So no. Yeah, so really would be. No, so this is actually an interesting question. So we've all been there. We've all been out, and even if you're, you know, it doesn't matter if you're a solo paddler or if you're in a group setting, sometimes you just need some time by yourself. How do you not go crazy? Let's throw the floor over to Darren first on this one. Give us a tip.
I go crazy when I'm not by myself.
Fair.
No, that's not exactly true. I'm a firm believer in solo trips, and I'll give you a quick story. The first time I took an extended solo trip, the first night I was really lonely. You know, and I thought, maybe I should turn around and go home. This isn't much fun. And I said, no, I'm going to give it another day. And then the second day I was like, this is awesome. And I talked to a friend of mine and I said, wow, that was really interesting. He's like, oh, you just outweighed the lonely.
Yeah. Okay.
So I just waited long enough until it went away. But part of it is how comfortable you are with your own company. Because some people, like themselves enough to be alone. And I like my own internal dialogue. You know, I like thinking about things, and sometimes I'll even sing, not Stan Rogers, but you know, just you know, be hum to myself, and I really enjoy that part of it. The one thing that I'm a little nervous about is I don't know what his experience is. If this is like, I want to do a solo trip, where do I buy a boat and all my stuff? And I get those fairly regularly. I'm going to go do a 2-week trip. I'm on the Yukon. What do I need to buy? And I'm, you know, hold on, sailor. We have some groundwork to do. If he's an experienced paddler, I think the most important thing is a psychological preparation, which is, you know, how much do you like to be alone with yourself, and what are you going to do? And are you going to take a book? You know, what are you going to do with your time?
Yeah. I think that's a really good point there, that you got to be pretty comfortable with yourself. And I think you kind of find that level of comfort when you're alone, when you're out in the great outdoors, when you get, you know, when you outweigh the lonely, there you go. David, what do you got for this one?
Well, it's kind of like anything else. You want to start off in little baby steps, you know, so try.
So lock yourself in a closet?
Yeah, exactly. You know, five minutes, you know, start with an overnight somewhere at a, at a national park or provincial park, and where there's a much more kind of a better safety net. And then, you know, because there's the skill set that you got to sort out, there's the mental side you got to sort out, and then, you know, try a weekend and go from there. I'd say get out and try it. What can go wrong?
There you go. Yeah.
What can go wrong?
Says the man from socialized medicine. What could go wrong that my country won't pay for? So, you know, that's an interesting question for me, too, because I've never had a problem. I know this is going to be difficult for you guys to understand, but I've never had a problem entertaining myself. And so this is an interesting question. Yes, I get lonely. I have two kids. I have a lovely wife that I love. And I love being a homebody when it's time to be a homebody. But I really don't have that issue of being able to switch that off and go out and play by myself. The one thing that, you know, in thinking about what I do when I'm alone, to keep the madness from eating up me, because I am a social person.
Right.
I busy myself with sometimes pointless, sometimes interesting things. I'm a guy who could, you know, I become that 8-year-old who could chase down squirrels all day in the woods just to see where they live. But you know, when I'm at camp, when I'm doing stuff, I tend to keep myself busy. I tend to fiddle with my tent. I try to set up my tent in the best place it can go. I fiddle if it's a place where you can have fires. I fiddle with the fire. I make sure I have firewood. I fiddle with my stove. I make sure everything's working, and I just keep myself busy when that moment comes when I'm not quite enjoying the outdoors the way I should. I fiddle with the stuff that I have, and that, you know, usually work will make me want to go out and go enjoy the nature and take a break from that work. And I have no problem going out then and enjoying the nature, enjoying the trees, enjoying the trail, exploring and things like that. Mm. So for me, it's never been an issue to keep myself entertained. I might be a little ADD in that regard, that I can just be happy with shiny things everywhere. But, you know, so think about what kind of tasks you have. I think you'd be surprised at how much time actually living on your own in a solo capacity takes up for you. Yeah. I don't think there's as much downtime as you might believe there will be. Darren said, you know, gave a great idea, which is bring a book. If there's a book that you've always wanted to read, or maybe you want to reread. I could spend hours reading a book just because I'm a slow reader and I have to sound out big words. thank you. And, anyway, yeah, so that's a great question, and we appreciate the questions. Guys, keep them coming. We're very, very happy to answer these questions, and we've been rambling on for quite a bit. Is there anything else we want to talk about before we end this, the 12th episode of Kayak Mainline?
Should we save the go on.
No, we'll keep that piece for the next one.
Yeah.
We got a good one.
Yeah.
Big juicy.
A doozy.
We're going to do it the next one because we don't have time to do it right this one.
You want to do a teaser, Darren? You got a teaser?
I'll do a teaser. So,
tease me.
So there's a particular material used in the paddle sports industry, primarily in canoes, that is disappearing from the face of the earth forever.
Dun 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 dun.
And what will happen? What will happen to Royal-X? What will happen to the people who make boats out of Royal-X?
How will this change the face of the world?
I've already panicked and I already ran to the hills.
Okay. Don't say anything more. We keep this.
No. There's nothing else to say. And then there's that other thing that we should talk about next time. You know, the thing.
All right. Well, yeah. You know, guys, it has been a lot of fun. I'm glad to be back in the saddle again. And you know what? I'm going out on a limb right now. Here I am going on a limb saying I'm not going to wait 6 months to record the next one.
Ooh, can I come?
Well, since you brought a story, since you brought your own lunch, I think we should have you back on the show. because you got the big teasers, of course, you know. So, yeah, Darren, in all honesty, it was a great time having you. You brought a side of the podcast that I think we were missing, which is that whole pesky, well-researched intellectual side.
Mm. Oh, I'm sorry. It'll never happen.
Well, that's all right. Every once in a while, even a blind squirrel can find a nut. So, Darren, thank you very much for joining us on this, the 12th episode of Kayak Mainline. And David, you got anything to say before we wrap this up?
I got nothing.
All right. Well, as always, my host, David Johnston, and myself, and our special co-host, Darren Bush. I'm Kelly Blades. And as always with me, like I said, David Johnston and Darren Bush, we are officially done with this, the 12th episode of Kayak Mainline. Remember, if you want to view paradise, simply look around and view it. We will catch you next time on Kayak Mainline.